Hello and welcome to the Digital Embellishment Show. I'm your host, Kevin Abergel, and today we are going to be diving into a topic that I think is very important and sparking a lot of conversations in the industry, the need for standards in digital print embellishments. And, you know, as this market keeps evolving, so does the need for consistency, clarity, quality control, a lot of different things that are today, it's more or less the Wild West. So we are actually joined by, and I think this is the first time we've ever done this, a panel here on the Digital Embellishment Show of absolute heavy hitters who understand a lot of different aspects of not just the digital embellishment side, but the design side and how both sides need to come together. So I'd like to introduce our panel first as we jump in. So first off, I'd like to introduce Sabine Lenz, who is, hey Sabine, how are you?
I'm good, I'm glad to be here.
Very good. So Sabine, you're gonna play a very important role for us today. You're gonna be the voice of the other side, right? So you're gonna give us an understanding of whether what we're talking about actually holds water, or how do the designers, which is really your area of expertise, talk about this kind of stuff. Second up, we have Sean Roberts, the Director of Digital Embellishment for Konica Minolta USA. Sean, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, Kevin. Thanks for having me on today.
Of course, Sean. We're really looking forward to hearing what you have to say. And then finally, last but not least, for our panelists, we have Ryan Moskin, who runs marketing for Harris and Bruno, who's also in digital embellishment. Super creative guy, too. Ryan, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, listen, man, it's my pleasure. But most importantly, this is going to be a very fun digital embellishment show because I am actually going to be passing off moderation duties to our chief experience officer, Mr. Eric Vessels. Mr. Vessels, why don't you take it away?
Glad to do it. Or just Eric. Is it on? I don't have a last name on the screen for some reason. All-star panel here, guys. Thanks. Really appreciate you joining us for what I think is a really important topic, as Kevin said. Is talking about standards and the need for standards in the digital embellishment space. So I want to kick it off. Let's talk about why standards are essential for digital embellishment. And Sabine, maybe you could start us off by sharing some of the common challenges you've observed in the industry when it comes to a lack of standardization.
Thanks, Eric. Yeah, so we have, for those who are not familiar with paper specs and the hub, the community that I lead, we have more than 19,000 creatives in the print creatives in the US alone. And these are really designers who all want to print. But more often than not, we help them navigate the print jungle. Let's face it. We have to be prepared that they're confused. There's a lot of young designers. They're confused when they hear, wait, there's a soft touch and then there is a velvet coating. What does that mean? There is LuxFS, there's cold foiling, there's glaze. What am I supposed to do? And I fully understand that printers, equipment manufacturers want to differentiate themselves. But I always say a confused mind doesn't make any decisions. So the more we confuse creatives and the brands, the less more likely they are to make a decision. If they're confused, they're stepping back and they're sticking with the tried and true. Wait, you know, this is too complicated. Let's just print four color and we're good.
It's easier not to do it than to do it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it sounds like there's a need for like a common way to talk about similar things, right? Instead of maybe calling it something over here and then you go over to this OEM or technology and calling it a different thing. So maybe from...
Go ahead. Sorry, I can reiterate on this one. The differentiation, I understand that everybody needs to find their USP, but the differentiation doesn't come with the equipment you have on the floor. The differentiation ultimately comes with A, what you do with the equipment, and more importantly, the relationship you build and the trust you build with your clients, with the creatives, so that when they come to you, and even if you don't have whatever it is on the floor, they trust you to make it happen, and they don't care. I just was at an event a few days ago, and some very seasoned print buyers were there, and they're like, designers were there, and they're like, I don't really care where he gets it, but my printer gets it done. And that's all she cared about. So right. It's really, that's the differentiation.
Right. Well, I think a couple of you actually were at Paper Specs, and there was a lot of confusion that was unearthed in some of those, the event that you had. Sabine, I think that kind of brought it home that this is a bigger issue than what we maybe even previously thought as an industry.
Let me get my soapbox out, Kevin. I have a traveling soapbox for this purpose. Yeah. Yeah.
I actually thought you were standing on the soapbox. I was fully expecting that.
No, I am this tall. So there.
Yeah, and
This is why we're doing this, you know. Right. Yeah,
and it does come across. Like, and I was at Paper Spec Live, wonderful event, by the way. But in some of those sessions, you'll see like some people are like, "What are you talking about? Like, and how and how are you talking about it?" So maybe from guys, Sean and Ryan, from an OEM perspective, what do you guys see as the biggest obstacle that a lack of standard creates from your perspective? For instance, are there challenges with like quality control, consistency, or customer expectations in terms of not having those types of standards? Sean?
I'm sure Ryan and I, neither of us have any issues with quality control, but I do think that, you know, it's beneficial for all OEMs to look towards a common set of what I would call, quantitative data as well. So not only the differentiation of how we're, because there's six different ways to skin a cat sometimes, right? We can have unique differentiators to provide the end result, but how we rank that criteria, how we score that criteria, is another area that I think OEMs could look to converge. So I think we've done this in some degree, and Sabine would know in paper spec. I mean, if every paper size you purchased was a couple millimeters different than another vendor, you would have a lot of issues trying to produce work. So we have adopted and standardized to a common set of, you know, A size, B size paper standards. That's how we buy paper today. That's what the printing industry buys, right? And so without that level of similar kind of measurement, similar ranking, even though you can buy paper in many different ways and you can buy many different grades, they have some commonality in terms of the thickness, the gauge, the size. I think those are some of the areas that, you know, the Ryan and his team can keep their differentiators. KM and GI can keep their differentiators, but you know, we want to have a common set of quantitative data.
Yeah.
Data is good, and I think it's important too. That I guess the Amazon guy's here too. My dog does the same thing. Don't worry. So Sean, one thing is too, and it's important to notice that you've done this before in previous lifetimes, right? In your other markets where you've brought new technology to market, and you've seen the importance of getting things on the right track in order to get market adoption, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I'll use, commonly called, a lot of us in this industry call it fifth color, you know, but when I was in my previous life over at Electronics for Imaging and ViewTech, you know, white ink was a new thing coming to the super wide area. And everybody had a white until we started grading the white. What's the hue of the white? What's the cast of the white? What's the brightness of the white? What's the white point, which actually matters, right? It matters when you put it in a different light, when you put it on a different material, what that white looks like. And so, you know, without being able to have some level of a scale that you're grading against, it became very confusing, right? That everybody has a white, but none of them are the same. And so I'm not saying that everyone should give up their unique selling proposition. That's not the case. We all need that, right? Right. Ryan and his team have them. We have them. And but coming to some level of a common scale, I think, is important.
Yeah, Ryan, cool. give you an opportunity to answer that. For the biggest obstacles that you see a lack of standards creates.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with what Sean's saying there. But you know, what I see as obstacles, you know, that a lack of standards creates from our perspective, the lack of standards, they create a significant hurdle in maintaining consistent quality control. So like variability in like gloss levels, foil adhesion thickness, so on and so forth, right? This creates customer frustration and it hinders that repeatability, right? They start to question, I mean, it looked great here, but then it was bigger here, smaller here. So what am I actually going to get? So I think the lack of standards of any of those is going to create further distrust in digital embellishment altogether, right? You know, we're going to get to a point where people are just not going to know what they get. And then they're going to be like, this is kind of like Sabine said, this is complicated. Why am I going to go with it?
Well, and I just want to comment on that. Ryan, you made a great point, which is repeatability, right? And repeatability, to have widespread adoption, we have to have consistency and repeatability. And not that somebody wouldn't be able to have repeatability one job to another on your equipment. That's not what I'm trying to instill. They'd have the same level of repeatability in ours. But as a designer, and let's go back to Sabine and the designers that you have, they're not always going to be locked into one print provider with one type of equipment. And so if they want to be able to spread that job out in a hub and spoke mentality, they need to have some consistency and repeatability so that end brand buyer has the confidence that they're being represented in the same way, regardless of the output technology, right?
I think that's probably the biggest one. I think 100%. When you think about, hey, Coca-Cola needs to be able to print the same color red in every country, you know, who's to say that that doesn't, you know, apply to digital embellishments as well?
Yeah, and that it's almost an answer to sort of my follow-up question to all of you, and that is, do we believe that the current lack of standards is impacting the adoption rate of digital embellishments, and how might clear standards change that? And Sean, I think Ryan, you both have sort of spoken to that kind of lowering the adoption rate. Are there any other aspects that you think are blocking the adoption rate? Because that's what we're all kind of wanting to increase, is that adoption rate.
Oh, I want to point that question to Sabine.
Yeah, no, it's for everyone.
Thank you, Sean, because I was ready. You saw me pulling out my thoughts, right? No, I know for a fact that because I spoke to, you know, I speak to a lot of industry experts over the course of a week, that just the other day somebody conveyed again that there's a general, the sale of specialty inks that are available today is much lower than anticipated. Hmm. And the equipment is there, but the inks are not used. And then let's make a wild guess why they are not used, because designers don't know about them, so they can't design for them, or they're not sure how to use them. And it's a different conversation. I understand, because I go to these print shows. I always joke, I go to these print shows so you don't have to. I understand it's a different conversation, like the conversation between the OEMs and the printer. You look at different things, but ultimately the conversation to the designer, it's not like, let's underprint silver and then we can overprint this. And especially younger designers, they're like, wait, what? Mm. And I'm playing devil's advocate here. I'm really trying in all the sessions that we do start, you know, make sure that everybody's on the same page, because people might think they are, but they're not. They don't understand that, wait, inks are not completely opaque. I didn't realize that, you know, things like that. And wait, I can now get thousands of metallic shimmers and shines. They don't know this. So we have to bring it to them, as I like to say, in bite-sized pieces to increase the adoption rate and ultimately then make all the equipment manufacturers and printers happy. Because the more designers understand and the easier we make it for them, the more they print, and the more they print, the better for all of us.
Yeah.
So how do you think?
Mic drop.
Yeah. Well, no, absolutely. And that is a very poignant statement. And I can't agree more. How do you think that OEMs like Ryan and myself and the others that are large in the embellishment space, how can we help support that? How can we help support the know-how, right, of the designers? I mean, there's good designer meetups, there's all sorts of forums. I'm sure that various manufacturers have their own, you know, forums, websites, obviously. So I as an OEM would love to help understand how I can better,
Kevin, you want to answer support the team. Because otherwise it sounds like I'm selling myself.
I don't want to plug my stuff. No.
Make sure they do tackle
good them. Answer for that, actually. Yeah. Obviously, if I could. So I was fortunate enough to go to Sabine's Paper Specs live. It was phenomenal. And I think one thing I really took away, Sean, to kind of answer your question there, is I sat in on a few digital embellishment like design sessions, right? And there's different techniques to do it, but you could start to see the creatives in the room, the wheels were turning, the light bulbs were starting to go off, and they started asking questions. And then they really started digging in of, all right, well, what's best here, what's best there? And I think things like what Sabine's doing is really making this accessible to that designer community to educate them on what's going on with digital embellishment and how this can how this can be used in their current designs.
And the way that I think that's a good point.
I'll send you the check later.
And I think, look, fundamentally, I think we have to think big picture on this stuff, right? And how many designers, Sabine, give me a number. Is it 2,000? Is it 3,000 designers in the whole world who really, really know how to design for digital embellishment? Yeah, like 2,000, 3,000 designers, more or less?
Very few.
Right. So
one of the, as Ryan pointed out, we had two different digital foiling sessions. And I spoke to one designer in the hallway and I said, well, wait, as per your program, you should be here with right. the toner-based one. And she said, no, I said already in digital foiling. I'm like, yeah, but that was Holoma-based.
Yeah.
And she said, what do you mean? That's different? I'm like, yes, it is. Shoot, go in your room. Right. you know, because they don't know, because there's nobody. Right. And I think it is the hands-on, as Ryan pointed out. It is really the sitting down and feeling and touching and seeing and being able to answer the ask questions.
Right.
And when then the light bulbs go on, and that I'm with Ryan on this one. It makes my day when I see the light bulbs gone and I'm like, wait, right. now I understand what's possible.
Right. Right. Well, I guess so, my point was to Sean is, look, if we're funneling all the jobs in the world through 2,000 or 3,000 people who basically mm-hmm. control the production of all the files in here, you know, it's going to be a very slow growth to teach and actively practice and keep in practice that entire design community. So the funnel for creative to get onto those machines, in my opinion, is very, very tight. And that's probably the biggest obstacle to the, in my opinion, that I'm seeing is how do you get rid of that funnel? And Sabine's probably going to throw something at the camera right now, but how can you design tools or create a way so that anybody can go online to a Vistaprint or to a web to print portfolio and just easily create for embellishments. I think
Kevin.
Well, you've got
to chime in. So here, Eric doesn't get a word in edgewise. Sorry, Eric. Go back to standards.
If you're going to only moderating, so I'm not supposed to talk. So it's fine.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, mind of the facilitator, right? Let you guys do the work. But I did just want to chime in here. It's like, it seems to me like there's two paths, right? One is to widen the funnel, and that right. seems like a pretty heavy lift, right? So if you've got 2,000 to 3,000 that can do it, growing that base so that more work gets through is a pretty heavy lift. Or then, as Kevin said, you can go outside the funnel and just make it more accessible to everybody in terms of designing for this stuff, right? So I think what we've been talking about thus far, and I really love this conversation, is there's a lot of education is what it sounds like needs to happen, and a lot of building tools that make it easier to where you might not need to educate. But I want to shift the conversation back a little bit to the standardization question, because before we can educate properly, though, we have to all know how to talk about it the same. So right. my next question, I want to explore the key areas for standardization and digital embellishment. So when we talk about that, there's several areas that come to mind, right? Terminology, file formats, material specifications, so on and so forth. So I'd love to hear from each of you on this. What do you see as the top areas where standardization could make the largest impact in our industry? And what terms do you currently use to describe your hashtag sexy print or embellished print or CMYK plus? Like what do you use, and how could we start to define these areas of standardization? Anyway.
Okay, I started you off. I'm sorry.
Go. No, ladies first, Sabine, please.
No, that's fine. I think the key really to everything that will unlock everything is the terminology, the standardization of terminology. It doesn't matter if you say, oh, and then this is, you know, this and this is that. We got to start. The top part is really the terminology. If we're already not in sync with that, whatever we do underneath doesn't matter. You know, if we say, okay, I call it polymer-based foiling and toner-based foiling because this is what it is. To me. And right. this is what I've been, you know, utilizing in our community because it makes the most sense. It's straightforward, you know, might not sound as sexy as some other things, but for me, it's important that we have, if the terminology is right, we can work on everything.
Yeah. So nomenclature.
I might suggest that we're probably farthest along on the, and not that we're farthest along the education of design, but I think we're farthest along on perhaps some of the standardization of the design in terms of the file handling, the preprint. That is, I'm going to assume here that everybody on the call is very familiar with spot colors, We're very familiar with layering. We're very familiar with, you know, PDF-based workflows. So that part of it, I think, on the design side, and we can probably thank Adobe for a lot of this, like there is some level of standardization already. Now, they may not know necessarily how to use that layering and how to, you know, what to avoid or what to capitalize on when you're building a new layer, right? Different topic, but they understand the idea for the most part on layering and spot colors and how things would, you know, with our system, it can be very easy. You have, you know, you have a spot color for your foil, you have a spot color for your varnish, and maybe multiple foils. And so people understand that concept, I think, pretty well. I think it's the treatment thereafter, as you're saying, Sabine, the treatment thereafter that requires some further definition.
Yeah, I think terminology is pretty obvious, right? Because you could say soft touch. Someone might say velvet touch. Is that different? Are there small differences? Are those exactly the same thing? So we get down to those. But exactly. For you, Ryan and Sean, another one is like, let's talk about material specifications or process standards to help ensure that consistency that we talked about across different platforms. Would that be around like foil density standards, gloss level standards, saying, how do we define what that gloss level is? How do we define what that foil density is? Are we saying it the same way? Are there issues there you're seeing?
I think that's a really good point. And like I'm going to kind of piggyback that terminology thing going into this, right? What I might consider a high res gloss, someone else might look at it and go, that's not high res gloss. My high res gloss is here. Someone else might look at mine and go, that's extremely high gloss, right? It can all be very subjective. So unless we have that terminology of high gloss is defined as this exact height, low gloss is so on and so forth. If we don't have that, if we're not all speaking the same language, I can look at something and I can go, yeah, this is high gloss. I give it to the designer and the designer goes, that's not at all what I wanted. So if we all agreed on that, right? We agreed on height, on edge definition, what those specifics could be coming off of a digital embellishment machine, I think the conversations would flow much easier and people would be able to understand when you say a high res gloss versus low res gloss or tactile feel versus non-tactile feel. Just defining those alone, I think would be a huge win. Because going back to your velvet touch and soft touch, if a designer goes to a printer and says, do you have velvet touch? And a printer's like, what is velvet touch? I don't have velvet touch. They may have just lost an opportunity, but they do because it's soft touch. So agree. Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
It's probably the easiest one to do too. No. Right. I mean, it's like, we just need to all sit around a table and say, all right, what are we going to call this thing?
Yeah.
There's no instruments, there's no charts and graphs, this should be the easiest one to do and probably have the most impact, to be honest, out of the gate.
Well, it's the base. Sorry, Eric. It's the baseline. You know, that's the stepping stone for everything else. This is the baseline we have to set, and then we can build on, then we can build on education and so on and so on. And as Sean said, yes, of course they know how to lay off files and whatever.
Well, I was just thinking back to something that came up early in the conversation that Sean made a really good point around paper, right? The standardization of paper. It's like, maybe like everyone knows what when you say B1, right? A4, right. Like everyone knows what that is. Maybe there needs to be some type of designation for foil density or some type of designation for, you know, raised, you know, what that is. Maybe that needs to be an actual L1 or an L2 or some type of thing where we have, you know, common that we're saying the same exact thing. So good stuff, really good stuff. So I want to explore a little bit now the benefits and challenges of like implementing these standards, right? Those barriers. It's no small feat. I think between the five people here, we could probably come to some consensus, or maybe we would argue forever. But when you widen out to the larger industry, it gets kind of tough. You know, the benefits are really clear of what they would be, but from communicating and getting everybody to buy in, there's a lot of challenges. What do each of you see as the main barriers to implementing some type of standards around this stuff within the industry? Like, what are we going to have to overcome to actually get to the point where we've got the equivalent of a B1 for some digital embellishment technology?
I think Sabine said jump in really on that. Interesting earlier. Like,
without...
Go ahead, John.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Oh, had a lag, sorry.
okay. So I think Sabine said something really interesting earlier. She ran into someone that was supposed to be in one digital embellishment foil haul for it, the Sleeking, I think, but they were actually trying to go to the one for polymer because that the terminology just was, I want gold foil. I should be over here, right? No, no, no. You need to be in this one because that's what you're doing. So going back to that barrier, I think this is a huge barrier right here. One, knowing the terminology, and then if we're thinking about it, right? Both of those seminars talk about how to put gold foil down on a sheet. The difference is they were done in two completely different ways. So we have all this really awesome digital equipment out there, and it all gets the job done, right? We have the gold foil hitting the sheet. The way that it gets there is not all the same. The end result, sure, but the process in which it does is completely different. So for me, when I'm looking at this, it's what process may work for one might not work for another with the end result that you want to see when it comes to flat or raised or whatever that may be. So I see that as a potential barrier there.
Yeah, I can't agree more with that. I think that, perhaps foil is maybe has the highest level of misunderstanding or complexity today. When you talk about hot foil, cold foil, Sleeking, you talk about all these ways to put that foil down on the sheet. I don't think necessarily the OEMs or maybe even Sabine are here today saying that we need to all adopt a common method. That is, only cold foil is going to rule them all. Right. But instead, we do need, it would be beneficial, I think, for this industry to at least it already exists. You can go out and you can Google what the differences are, right? And Ryan will talk about why one may be better than another. I would do the same. But I do think that it serves us well to at least be clear on and be maybe a little bit more proactive or evangelistic on the differences in the way in application. Because you're right. At the end of the day, silver foil on paper. Yeah. But there are unique advantages to the way that is done and disadvantages as well to the way that is done.
No, go ahead. Finish up.
Sorry. I was gonna say, each vendor will, perhaps obviously want to support their method, and there's reasons why you would do that. But we should just be clear on, and people can also do their own research to be clear on the difference in technology.
Well, Kevin and Sabine, maybe the answer is standardizing the end result, and sort of divorcing the process from the end result. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I think. Go ahead, Sabine, if you want to answer this, but I was just going to say,
took a deep breath. I don't want to get in the way of that one.
No, I was thinking because the original question was, what do you think the biggest obstacle was going to be? And going into this, when we kicked this thing off with this article that we wrote that came out a couple weeks ago and a lot of response to it, I was honestly thinking the biggest obstacle was, how do we get a dozen or so billion-dollar OEMs all on the same page, and how do we get them to agree to change their marketing? How do we get them to agree to read from the same playbook? And I thought that was going to be the biggest one. And what I'm finding is that's not at all an obstacle. I think all the OEMs are understanding that, hey, there's a fundamental issue here. If we all get on the same page, let's put all our sales, fights aside, let's put all the competition aside. It's cutthroat out there. I get it. I know. I was honestly very pleasantly surprised at how much the OEMs do want to band together to create this kind of standardization, because they understand that, I hate to use this, but it really applies. It's rising tide floats old boats. And I think that's such a cliche thing to say, but in this case, I think it's so appropriate.
But it's also true. Yeah.
Right.
It's definitely true.
Some cliches are just true.
That's why they're cliches in the first place.
That's right.
So Sabine, I was going to follow up with you. If you didn't have more on that topic, like how from I think we're figuring out what we need to have happen here. And like Kevin says, there's much more, the OEMs are much more amenable maybe than we even thought in terms of collaborating and working together. But how about the design? Can the design community and brands sort of put additional pressure to have such standards?
Very hard. It's very hard, Eric. Great question. I think the main problem that we, coming from the print industry, seem to forget, we think everybody thinks print. They wake up in the morning, they jump out of bed, and they think, print, fabulous.
What
and
am I going to put in?
That's
what I do.
I think we have to recognize that most designers do not have all the days where designers had all day to print are long gone. Right. There's several studies that basically show that around about 80% of their time designers spend on web, digital, and other things. So that leaves them around about 20% to print. Now, we expect them to dig and figure it out and do the research, and then it's confusing. Don't ask AI about any digital embellishment. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to hallucinate a lot of stuff. So we're back to the easier we can make it. And I would like to say, as much as I would like to say, yes, designers will push this. They don't have the time and the bandwidth to do this because they're already grasping. They're like, we love print. We don't have the time. That's why they come to places like us, you know, and say, okay, explain this to me. Give it to me straight. What do I need to know here? And so, but I would love to say, yes, every designer will stand up and we carry all our little flags. It's not going to happen. So that's why I have a soapbox. And I've been talking about these standards. And together with FSEA, we created a foil cheat sheet, which is, we're working on round three of that one, actually, because as the technology is evolving, we've been making updates, and it's very exciting. But we need to get something like this in the hands of about every designer. And really, and this is why we're working with FSEA on it, because I'm like, okay, no, designers don't care about this. Let's keep the terminology simple. Let's keep the explanation simple. Right. And then in the first iterations, I remember that some of the OEMs were not as easygoing about this, Kevin, as you mentioned. I hope they've come around now and realize that ultimately, you know, if designers don't know, rising tide boats.
Yeah. So it sounds like what you're saying, Sabine, is there needs to be more of a push towards standardizing and simplification toward the design and brand community than it is a pull from them.
Yes, because they don't know what they're pulling for. They don't know what they're pushing for. They don't, as Ryan has seen and Kevin, or not Kevin, but you even, at our event, they don't know there's differences. They don't, you know.
Yep. Very cool guide, by the way. I got a copy of that in Chicago. So you mentioned FSEA, and I want to, this kind of segues into my last question here, and then we'll wrap up with some final thoughts. It's been extraordinary. How do you guys feel about partnerships between associations like your what they think, FSEA, and individual OEM design groups as a practical path forward for giving some framework to some of these standardizations? What role should each group play in that collaborative process? And how do you think that could benefit us? Because we've already got some established association groups. We've already got established user groups. We've got established infrastructure. How can we leverage that to get us to where we think we need to be on digital embellishment standards? Kevin, I'll just start with you. How about?
Well, I mean, I wrote a little bit about this in the article, and I think fundamentally, and I could be wrong, and there's a lot of brains on this call, and I think can probably think of a smarter solution than me, but I know that FSEA has the OEMs and the users. So they understand the market at a very granular level, as well as a 50,000 foot view, right? You have an organization like What They Think, also known as AP Tech. People don't realize this, but they have ANSI certification, meaning that they have a legal seat at the table for ISO standards in the industry. So the way that I was thinking this should probably work is, you know, how do we marry the knowledge around the industry with people who have the power to sit down and institute some kind of an ISO standard. It's going to be long and boring work, but somebody needs to do it. And so I feel that there's some kind of a fusion that needs to happen there where you have the expertise of the FSEA married with the legal power of ANSI certification to be able to push stuff that is relevant, not stuff that is pie in the sky.
Yeah. Anybody have anything else on that?
Ultimately, everybody needs to come to the table, the OEMs and so on. But I think it speeds up the process, and this is what we ultimately need. We need to speed up the process. We don't have the luxury to sit here another 5 years and hash it out and then realize, wait a second, all the designers have either that know what they're doing have either retired or they've given up on us. And then we're wondering because, you know, I get excited about all these new technologies and the new opportunities that are available to designers and they don't know. Right. So I think to speed up the process, as Kevin suggested, it would be helpful to have somebody like FSE and AP Tech, what they think, sit down, and there's a digital embellishment group right there. I think just the five of us would sit down, we hash it out, and then have everybody sign it. That's
that's it. The five rings that rule them all.
We're done. Speed up the process. You know, and then the OEM follows suit.
Sabine, it's the show-up rule. If you show up, you get to make the rules.
I'm here.
Right? Yes.
But I do want to comment, because there's another challenge with that. So I agree on the long and arduous path. And, you know, when you're talking about a global revolution, when you're talking about a global scale, which you asked, what do we OEMs need? I don't want to speak for Ryan and the Harris Brewer team, but obviously with the structure within ConocoPhillips globally and MGI and the product that we have, you can't just do this limited to the US, right? We're too widespread in that. So it does, anytime that you introduce those regional influences, yeah, you add complexity. You add complexity, you add time. The other challenge to that being such a long period of time is that by the time we adopt the standards, and I don't want to fault any other like color consortium standards that are out there, but in some instances, by the time that the European Fog Association adopted the standards, they moved. The technology's different. Ryan's got a whole new product out there. I got a whole new product out there, and it's not relevant anymore. So we have to actually look at what we would do to adopt quickly, as Sabine said. I might suggest an effective path would be to look at adjacent industries or adjacent technologies that we use that are already adopted. And so we talk about like spots, right? Spot colors and the layering. Okay, thank you. Pantone, like spots are already there. Like we know a lot of people know how to create spots. In my previous life, where it was inkjet printing, adhesion to materials and substrates was always a challenge. And I can remember hundreds of times having customers and prospects into our applications labs that would take a utility knife and just start hacking away at the ink and seeing if it would peel off. And more and more manufacturers adopted the ASTM, we call the tape test, D3359, the tape test, where you actually scored and graded the number of squares that would peel off. And so then you could quantify what your adhesion was, right? And that came out of the automotive industry with, paints on metals. And so I think that there are other industries perhaps that we could look at that like help Ryan and I to quantify. You said like that thickness, what's high gloss, what's not high gloss. There are proven like paint technologies out there that maybe we would look to leverage and pull in to make that process a little bit faster.
That's a good point. But what you said, something really important though, that I want to highlight here, because I caught it in terms of the global reach. I think that's where OEM partners are important, right? Because your organization already has that infrastructure and that some of that knowledge of what those challenges are regionally. So as an OEM partner, you can inform this process of like, hey, we gotta have something for here. So really good point. Guys, I'm aware that we've, believe it or not, spoken for like almost 40 minutes. So I wanna get to unless anybody's got really pressing stuff on that, I want to get to my final thought and wrap it up here. And it is this, and it's a round robin kind of just a quick flashcard type answer. One standard or change you'd like to see implemented in digital embellishment in the next 12 months. Ryan, I'll start with you.
I would say just that universal language that we're all going to speak is going to be absolutely huge. If we can all start talking the same language, if the designers can know, when they say, I want high gloss, they know they're going to get this high every time. I think that's going to be huge. Like Sabine said at the very beginning, make it simple. People don't make decisions. If it's complex and crazy, they're not going to sit there and do all that research. They don't have the time. We need to make this as simple as possible. So if we can all sit down and agree and standardize what this all means, not just to the designers, but also to the printers, to the customers. We standardize this across the line, and I think more people are going to be less hesitant to jump into something that's so variable.
John, how about you? One thing next year that gets changed.
Yeah, so this isn't probably a golden answer, but it is along the line of Ryan's, which is that a standard set of terminology, not that maybe it may take longer than all for all OEMs to adopt it, but much like we used to have the printer's handbook, right? Back in the 80s, 90s, a little printer's handbook that you'd go through and you would find all the different terms of what a new, somebody that's a printer's apprentice might not know all the different bindery terms. They might not know, one type of binding technique to something else. And there was a little, I remember using it when I was younger, a little book that you could go through and you could learn all these things. And that doesn't exist for embellishment today. It doesn't actually be a book because I don't think there's that many variations, but a little term, simple things like the foiling, the differences in the foiling. So somebody can understand what they actually either have today or are looking at tomorrow and what some of the differences are. And then they can understand which one's right for them. But today they don't even know, what the different processes are out there. So that level of just some common, like Brian's point was, common language, common ways to grade and score, common terminology would be really, really beneficial.
Yeah, very good. Sabine, how about you? One thing next 12 months that we can change?
I'm with Ryan and Sean. Really, the overall, the baseline. I don't think we have to have hashed out everything yet. We don't have to go a mile deep yet. We can work on that later on. As long as we're clear, like, okay, this is polymer-based foiling. This is toner-based foiling. This is soup foiling. This is, now we can work from there. Now we can, because toner-based foiling, let's face it, is not going to be high. So now we can go to Ryan's point. That would be the next level and say, okay, now we got this one down, next. But we, I don't think we have the luxury to wait for years till we all agree on the mile deep solutions. No. We really have to start with, okay, this is the baseline. This is where we start. Now let's work from down there.
Well, and as Sean says, if waiting for years, stuff could be obsolete and new stuff could be right out there. So I think another point just to add, and if this is your answer, Kevin, I apologize. Having some method to where we can iterate those standards and move and shift as the industry evolves. So Kevin, what's your one thing?
No, listen, there's nothing else to add. Maybe some kind of a mechanism that, like you said, we can iterate as we evolve as an industry, but I think we got to start at point A, and point A is we got to build that base. What are we talking about here, and how do we stop confusing everybody? So I think everybody nailed it. And I think, it's overall consensus number one thing that is not only important, but something that we could probably get done in the next year.
Absolutely. Well, guys, that's it for the Q&A for the moderation. This has been fantastic. I mean, lots of good stuff. I'm going to throw it back to our host, Kevin, to wrap us up here and guide us out. Appreciate you guys for all your answers.
Yeah. Thank you all for joining us today. You guys have been amazing. Eric, phenomenal job. You are my new favorite moderator. So we're going to be doing a lot more of these, I think, moving forward. Listen, if we do this correctly, I love because poor Ryan's on a time delay. So his laugh comes in like a little bit later.
Like the guy in the bedroom watching the game, like laughing at nothing. Stream, right?
That's right. It's okay. That's right. So anyways, guys, look, it's clear if we're going to do this, I think we all need to put our competitive juices aside. And, I think there's a willingness to do that. And if we do it and we do it correctly, we're going to build a better market for everybody. It's clear embellishments, digital print embellishments. We know there's a big potential. We know that if we do the right things, we can help grow the market and we can educate people and really address, the market, adoption question. So big thank you to our panelists for sharing their insights and expertise. Stay tuned for new episodes of the Digital Embellishment Show. And until next time, keep creating, keep innovating, and let's all work together to bring digital embellishments to the mainstream. I think we can do it. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Thanks for listening.